It's Thursday, September 11th, 2014, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, a show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 79, Only You Can Prevent Building Fires. Runtime for this episode is 52 minutes. Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast where Mars fire ignites. My name is Jeremy.
I've actually been wondering whether I can put out fires with Kamehamehas. I'm Tyler.
I'm the one starting them all. My name is Zach.
Historically speaking, yes, you can. Goku learned the Kamehameha wave in order to douse the fire on Mount wherever Chi-Chi's dad lives.
I thought Roshi actually ended up doing it.
Yeah, he did, and then Goku learned by imitation. It was like, Kamehameha, your car is totaled, Bulma.
Have you seen the most recent episode of DBZ Abridged?
Yeah, I think so. It's the one with Cell, right? And Cell's like, he's drinking your arm! I know!
But Cell starts doing the Kamehameha, and Piccolo's like, no one but Goku can do that, and Gohan, and Vegeta, and me that one time I tried it just to see if I could, and Yamcha. Yeah, that was a pretty good episode. I was less impressed with the one before it, but this one was also pretty good. Or this one was back to being pretty good.
I feel like it's been slow since the one where they discovered Cell's time machine, but...
That's probably because not a lot... It was slow in the actual show, too, so...
They have the Order of the Stick problem where they can tell jokes or advance the plot, and it's hard for them to do both.
Yeah. Although, Order of the Stick got to the point where they're doing it fairly consistently. I guess.
Telling jokes or advancing the plot.
Within the same comic, they would like devote half the strips to advancing the plot and half the strips to joke, which works pretty well.
DBZ Abridged has sort of always had that. The jokes have just gotten better, so they've included more. Like, the way they do Kami and Nail and Piccolo
so
is just
good.
Fantastic.
I love how they're playing pool in his head. Yeah. You can't fit a pool table in there.
And Nail is in the left audio channel and Kami is in the right.
Oh, is it? I hadn't noticed that.
I listened with headphones, so I... picked up on it.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Maybe we should start doing that. Zach, you can be on the right audio channel.
Then it would just always have nothing on it.
Yeah. Tyler, when you're not watching Abridged Dragon Ball Zs, what are you doing?
Dragon Ball Jesus. Actually, that's just Goku. Never mind.
I know you don't watch Rooster Teeth stuff. You should seek out their Fibbage Let's Play. It's amazing.
Fibbage?
It's a word game. I don't know how you would do it without a video game console. But it's basically they put up a piece of trivia.
Okay.
They have an answer and a lie, and everyone tries to make up their own lie. And then so anyone who guesses your lie, you get points for, and if you get the right answer, you get points. And
oh, that's awesome.
They had some really good stuff.
There is actually a like pen and paper board game type thing that does that.
I can see it working in pen and paper, but there are just certain things that it's like, how do you deal with that? Like, if everyone's writing something in, it's going to be obvious which one is the...
Basically, you take turns being the reader, and the reader doesn't get to guess.
I guess because it's a game, this one gets to be double blind because of that.
Which is awesome.
Some university in California that gives scholarships to Catholic students with the last name Zappos. So the question was like, what last name? And then they have like Jesus and then Christ and then Jesus Christ Pope was one of the answers they put in.
That one is longer.
So yeah, it's good Let's Play. Anyway, what have you been playing since you haven't been Let's Playing?
All the games. Okay, so unsurprisingly, I played a lot of Payday 2. I beat Rogue Legacy, I think, for the third time now.
Oh, nice. I should go back and play that.
So I have yet to start my new game plus 3.
I borrowed Skull Girls from you, but I just installed it. I didn't actually play it.
It's actually pretty good. I like Skull Girls really well.
I was in the mood for a fighter, and then I just like saw some random art from it. I'm like, hey, I could steal that from Tyler.
Speaking of which, I actually just kind of randomly played... Playing with you that one time made me want to play it. Street Fighter 4.
I want to play it too, but my copy's at your house and my Xbox is in Wyoming, so makes it hard.
Combination of circumstances. I actually own Street Fighter 4 on my Steam account. It's just not the Ultimate Edition.
I thought you had it on your Windows Live account. Or no, you have it on Steam and you had to register through Windows Live because Microsoft was a nightmare hellscape.
But it only has, like, maybe half the characters that the Xbox version does.
You have the original version. I had the second version. They're on, like, the fourth version now.
Speaking of which,
because
I found...
Because Capcom doesn't know how to number things properly.
Instead of giving it numbers, they give it adjectives. So you can usually tell which one you're on by which adjective they've used. So if you're on Mega, it's the one that has Mega Man in it.
I can't remember what the most recent edition is called, because all the pros just call it Street Fighter 4.4.
I have, however, I think found my new favorite Street Fighter character, so I hope she persists. Jury?
Oh, yeah? I've seen some good juries. I really like Cammy in that one.
I have always liked the idea of Cammy, but I can never play her.
Street Fighter 4 is the only one I can really work her with, but I really like her in Street Fighter 4.
I'm a big fan of Juri. She's got, like, a weight projectile.
Yeah.
And, like, an awesome dive out of the air kick. And anyway, so I played a couple runs with Juri and Dudley, because Dudley.
Yeah. Not Guile, though?
Not Guile.
In America?
I do, yes. I hate America's haircuts anyway.
And their dual tattoos identical on each bicep.
Can you imagine that guy actually walking around an Air Force? Like, what exactly does he do for the Air Force?
He's a colonel, I think. He's a colonel in the movie, well, which is clearly the best representation of Street Fighter we've ever had.
I know in Alpha 2, he and Charlie are, like, investigating Bison.
Yeah.
And Charlie's like, sweet tats, bro, I'll tag along. I got a ponytail, see?
And Chun-Li is like, I'm friends with you now.
I'm friends with you now. I really want her to be Southern for some reason.
No.
That would make me really happy.
Even this terrible Street Fighter movie didn't do that. It made Ken and Ryu con artists, but it kept Chun-Li as a Chinese
Interpol?
She was a reporter, not an Interpol agent.
Oh.
But she was still wanted Bison dead for destroying her village.
Oh.
That's where the great, like, oh. So I understand. The day Mighty Bison destroyed your village was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday.
I really need to watch that movie just to
so
say those.
So good! Like, M. Bison is so good. And then Jean-Claude Van Damme is talking and you can't understand him.
He's the guy who plays Ryu in that one, right?
No, he plays Guile.
Okay.
And he's like an Air Force pilot. He like does a bombing run on M. Bison's base and then... And M. Bison is trying to make Bison Bucks the world currency. And he, like, pays Sagat for arms deals in Bison Bucks and says they'll be super valuable once he kidnaps the Queen of England. And so good.
Clearly. Magnetism.
He got kicked to death by Jean-Claude Van Damme. So, yeah. And then died of cancer in real life.
I didn't realize it was available on the Virtual Console, so I was making my list today. And Alpha 2 is on there. And
yeah.
That was the first Street Fighter game I ever played more than 5 minutes at a time in an arcade. So.
I've only played Alpha once in an arcade in Nevada for like 2 minutes, so I'm really excited to get to those. But we have like Fighting Street and Final Fight that we should do first.
Yeah, Final Fight's also on the list because Hagar, Mayor of New York.
Who needs more side-scrolling beat-em-ups?
No one. No one needs them.
But Final Fight looks good. Like, I've seen people play it, and I'm like, that one looks fun.
Yeah, it does, actually.
I mean, you can be the mayor and suplex people and beat them with a lead pipe.
Golden Axe is actually not a bad beat-em-up, and we haven't done that one
Turtles
yet.
In Time. Why are we denied Turtles in Time?
Battletoads.
Damn you, copyright.
No, not Battletoads.
Zach, you think you've played hard video games on this podcast, but we haven't played Battletoads.
I actually remember playing Battletoads.
I've actually beaten Battletoads. So
I haven't.
I think it is easier than Ghosts and Goblins, honestly.
Okay. I am sad that we don't have access to X-Men 2, though, because that was an excellent game on the Genesis.
There's one that I played forever ago, and it's just like a side-scrolling platformer, and you can choose between random X-Men, and they all have like Street Fighter style inputs, and Wolverine has a dragon punch that makes him do Tornado Claw in it, and I can't remember the name of this game.
This game up. It does sound good.
No, Psylocke's in it.
I had the LGN or LJN X-Men game for NES.
When you first start up the game, does it just dump you as a main character, as one of the characters in a frozen wasteland?
No, you get to choose. And
okay. Because the X-Men 2, the first level is, you hit start and it drops you in as a random character in the game on the first level.
There's also Marvel Battle of the Gem, in which you're trying to get one of the Infinity Gems. And Wolverine is in that inexplicably. Like, he's suddenly on the Avengers and he's like, I wasn't on the Avengers 5 minutes ago, why did you guys call me? And they're like, Wolverine, you're immortal, right? Want to go steal that from Thanos? But I didn't play that much Street Fighter. I instead played a lot of Rogue Legacy. I started, I can't even remember the name of it now. What
left
is it?
An impression
called?
On you, didn't it?
No, it's an, no,
was it
I,
a JRPG?
No, it's the fourth game in the Phoenix Wright series. I just can't remember what it's called.
The one where you're Apollo Justice?
Yes. I just.
That might be, it's not Dawn of Justice. It's not Batman 5, Superman.
No, there's, Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, Phoenix Wright Trials and Tribulations, and Phoenix Wright Justice for All, though I think I got the order of those backwards. And then whichever one, Apollo Justice and Phoenix Wright is a bum who plays piano.
Yeah,
and it's fantastic.
Because he was disbarred by being framed for being bad at his job or something.
I don't even know yet. I haven't gotten that far.
Have you played the one where you're Miles Edgeworth in France and you have to prosecute like the French gangs?
No, that's next on my list after this one.
Okay. I've heard that's the best one, but
I've been trying to kind of like play them in order, and I think the Miles Edgeworth one was the one published after the one I'm currently playing. So
okay.
That's my next task, is Miles Edgeworth, Ace Prosecutor. So it's thus far been pretty, I don't know, it's a Phoenix Wright game. It is everything that you would expect from a Phoenix Wright game. So thus far, I've only gotten like an hour in. So
I wonder if Phoenix Wright is going to defend Superman in the trial.
So the Phoenix Wright Professor Layton crossover got released this weekend.
Oh, is it out? I've seen some trailers for it. I didn't know it was out.
Yeah, it's actually out now. It's available for purchase.
So are you going to finish the Phoenix Wright games and then jump on that train so you don't miss any of the sweet story?
Well, the other game I'm playing simultaneously, I guess alongside the new Phoenix Wright game, and this happened more or less by coincidence, is I saw that the crossover is out, and Alex is like, but we haven't played the sixth Layton game yet. I'm like, you're right. So I'm also playing Professor Layton in the Azran Legacy while I'm playing Phoenix Wright, the one with Apollo Justice.
Now the official title.
Yep. I really wish I could. It's not Justice for All. That's already been a thing. It might just. Oh, it's Apollo Justice Ace Attorney. That's what it's called.
Oh, okay.
So I'm playing those two games simultaneously, and the last Professor Layton, I guess, I think it's the last one.
Is this another time travel one?
No. It is really awesome, though, because you get your own personal airship, Final Fantasy style. So
solve puzzles in?
Yes.
Is it powered by cutting Gordian knots?
No. You actually team up with another archaeologist who happens to be rich, and find a girl cased in ice for a million
years. Wait. It's Power Rangers Operation Overdrive?
Yes. But so you basically get to use his ludicrous funds to go around the world solving puzzles while...
It's Power Rangers Operation Overdrive.
While trying to defeat an evil organization trying to solve the same puzzles, who need to get their hands on the girl because she's an emissary of an ancient race.
Do you lose your powers in the middle, and since it's the 15th anniversary, various characters from the previous seasons come to temporary fill-in?
Actually,
that sounds like the only difference between this and Power Rangers Operation Overdrive.
Something similar, I think. I think you actually lose your sidekicks and you get earlier sidekicks to replace them. Does that count?
Jeremy just wants people to watch Power Rangers Operation
Overdrive. No, it's
terrible.
Don't watch Power Rangers Operation Overdrive.
So why do you keep mentioning it?
Because this is the exact plot of Operation Overdrive. There's a rich archaeologist who finds some stuff frozen, and so he makes a team of Power Rangers to go solve puzzles around the world to find archaeological artifacts that they need... Because the plot said so.
MacGuffins. That's actually basically what we're doing right now, is we're collecting the MacGuffins, because apparently this ancient race thought that you needed to have 5 MacGuffins in order to get into their secret technodome, Castle in the Sky style. So, I don't know. It's easily the most awesome one thus far. It is, of all the Professor Layton games, and I think I played all of them, my favorite. I think that's actually pretty much it. I don't think I have been playing... Oh, I played some FTL again, finally. I did, like, 2 runs with the Crystal Cruiser, so...
Zach, I assume you haven't been playing anything with the plot of Power Rangers Operation Overdrive.
I have,
so what
taste,
have you been playing?
So clearly not.
How about Power Rangers RPM?
No.
See, that's a great plot. It's been done a lot, but...
I spent most of Sunday and a good chunk of the week playing Civ 5 because it was on
Oh,
sale.
Yeah, I saw that. I really liking it.
I like it. It's different than Civ 4 in that I can't just get a chunk of iron earlier than my opponents and then wipe out the nearest person to me by just building swordsmen, because the way cities work in that game, and you can't just stack 400 swordsmen on the same tile.
You also are limited for each source of iron, gives you, I think, 3 swordsmen you can build.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was 1-to-1 ratio for my Japanese samurai.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the ratio is. I think it depends on the map size as well as some other factors.
Samurai might need more because they have that full metal armor.
But that gives you incentive to keep multiple tactical resources if you find, like, 3 veins of iron.
That's actually pretty neat.
And you need, like, you actually need siege engines to knock down fortifications in that one. Whereas in Civ 4, you could basically just get away with promoting people to city raiders and barging in through the front gate.
That's what I always did.
Work like units in Civ 5. They have health you have to work down to invade, and they have an attack.
Huh. That's actually kind of neat.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's just hard.
From what I've heard, the I guess the big update that they made to Civ 5 made it a really good game.
Like, the first expansion, I didn't play until the second one came out. I heard, like, at the end of the first expansion, combined that and the patches, it became a pretty good game. And with the second expansion, it's quite good. It's better than Civ 4, I think.
And when I bought it, I bought it with all the crap because it was on sale for like 60% off or something like that. So it cost me a grand total of $20.
That's a good price.
Not even $20 for it, for the whole thing there, which is really, really handy.
This is somewhat non sequitur, but Ryan plays it all the time. So
yeah,
if you're
seeing him online. I'm not really playing with anybody right now.
I was going to say, if you were looking for a multiplayer game, I suspect it would be amenable. But
well, I mean, I think the only time I'd probably play Civ 5 multiplayer is when I just want to kind of, you know, shoot the breeze and talk whatever and just hang out with, like, you guys or something like that. You don't own it, though, do you?
No. Does it still take 5 years to complete a game?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It still takes a while. But the last couple of games, because I haven't really gone up because I'm trying to get used to the new systems. So I'm still on kind of low-tier difficulty, so all the people are dumb as bricks, and I'm able to invade whenever I feel like it.
I forget, does that have, like, the Galciv thing where on low difficulties the leaders will be like, hey, if I was on a higher difficulty, I totally wouldn't stand for this, but
they
not.
Don't do that, but I have got a couple of them where they're like, you're amassing troops on my border. This makes me suspicious. Are you going to invade me? And you can say, no, I'm totally not going to invade you. I'm totally not lying to you. And the other one is, oh, sorry about that. I'll move them immediately.
Well, that's also
I usually say, no, I'm totally not going to invade you. And then like 3 turns later, it's like, all right, we got enough of the army here. Charge.
That's what Galciv does. The AI is smart enough to know that you're massing troops on their border. But on lower difficulties, they won't respond to it other than saying,
yeah, I know.
So
I played one where it was like a continents map that had one little strip that linked one side of the continent to the other.
Okay.
And I wiped out one of the two nations that shared one half of the continent with me. And then I kind of hung around and let the other guy stay there. It was Gandhi. And then eventually
he's your worst enemy. He'll come back with Robomex later.
And then I got tired of leaving him on my island and wiped him off my island too.
Can you not make them vassals in that one?
You can make puppet states out of people, but I was like, I'm just going to wipe you out. Okay. Because there are city states that you can effectively make into vassals, or they'll effectively be vassals for you. Like, I was playing the Japanese, and I abruptly found myself with a squadron of Norwegian ski infantry, and I'm like, where did you come from?
I like how Norway's two special units are Vikings and ski infantry.
Yeah, the Japanese have samurai and zeros.
Zeros?
The fighter.
From World War II. Their main aircraft of World War II was
the Japanese Zero. Was the most effective anti-aircraft aircraft during World War II. Huh. It made the naval battles in the Pacific difficult.
But either way, that's their special unit. It's like one of the main things that they're well known, they were known for in World War II.
They had a lot of fuel, so they were very effective kamikaze.
They were also very, very light and made out of balsa wood. So, and they had no self-sealing fuel tanks, so they went up like a Christmas tree. Naval history aside, I was playing a lot of that. Civ 5 does suffer from some balance problems with some of the civilizations. Like, Japan has a really, really strong ability just as their civ ability, because their units fight like they aren't wounded when they are.
They took out leader abilities from Civ 4, and they just gave unique abilities to each civ. Because they ignore injuries.
There's one leader per civ.
That's not something I'm familiar with in Civilization. Do they fight less effectively?
They're hurt, they fight less effectively. But when the Japanese units are hurt, they fight like they're normal, which makes them incredibly effective.
Say, one of the webcomics I read, he really prefers, I think, the Aztec.
I found I don't really like the guys that have their special unit in the ancient age because you can't use them.
Yeah, you can't find anyone to smack over the head with it.
Yeah, I mean, so your special unit is basically wasted at that point. I want to try America. I just haven't yet.
They get the Minutemen.
And I want to try
which are riflemen, but better?
Musketmen.
Oh, they're musketmen? I thought they were riflemen. I didn't really get a chance to utilize them too much because I haven't actually played as America. I'm still trying to feel out how the tech tree scale works in that one, because it's a little different than it was in Civ 4.
Is it voiced by Leonard Nimoy? Because that's my favorite part of Civ 4.
Sadly.
It's by a guy who sounds a little like him.
Yeah, it is by another celebrity, but I can't remember who.
Like, it wasn't so far off that it, you know, kind of threw me. The part that I miss is when you build a wonder in Civ 4, you know, it goes into the, like, building thing and it shows it being built. They don't do that in Civ 5.
Oh, it just happens.
But if you're building the Great Wall, like, you can see in the area where it's being built, on the turns that it's being built.
Okay.
It being built, but they took that part out, and I'm like, I really liked that about Civ 4.
I kind of wish George Takei voiced it, because I would just listen into an entire, like, just George Takei saying things for hours.
The entire cast of the original Star Trek voices every entry, and it's random which one you get each time you get the technology.
I would actually, that would be awesome.
Plastics. Just one word. Plastics.
And then a lot of League, watching some League, some Payday with Tyler and Ed, because that's what we always do. So that's basically everything I've been playing, you know, chilling out, having Tyler's mic blast me with some static.
No super hyper exploding tensioned in?
No, not really.
Okay.
So I thought, Jeremy, what have you been playing?
Jeremy, what have you been playing? That's an excellent question that I'm trying to remember the answer to. A little Minecraft.
The games?
The big 1.8 update came out and I haven't played since.
I've restarted the server.
Oh, okay.
So
was it recently?
I specifically waited for the update. Ed was listening to the episode where we first mentioned that I was considering doing that, and he said, hey, you should wait until, like, Tuesday, because that's when the 1.8 up. So
now there are undersea monoliths with Cthulhu monsters in them, and Dorite.
Yeah. What's the point of Dorite? As far as I can tell, it's decorative.
Yeah, so. Pretty much. They added granite, Dorite, and one other different type of stone.
Anyway, saved off our old server, and it may not be running right now, but we do have a new, brand new 1.8 world that has been barely touched. It's virgin. So, we should play sometime.
Start pillaging that virgin.
Yeah, we gotta get some lapis lazuli.
And make giant blue things?
No, now you need lapis to enchant.
Oh, really?
That's why
that makes it useful, finally. So.
Well, again, it was useful decoratively for a while. And they're like, let's make blue flowers.
Oh, that's right. You can use flowers as a dye. I forgot about
Maybe
that.
Maybe one day I will buy and care about that game.
Eh, maybe. I know, that's why Dan can't stand it. He vastly prefers Terraria. And I can see why, but I just can't get into Terraria the same way I do in Minecraft. Something about 3D caves.
I've also been watching a lot of horror game Let's Plays, just because Zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist?
That seems weird.
That's an awesome name.
No, Zeitgeist, I mean like the popular Zeitgeist. There are sort of two big horror games out overlapping.
There are?
Well, there was PT, which, are you familiar with that at all? It's a PS4 exclusive, so.
No, I've never even heard of it.
Same here.
Okay, so we sort of talked about it, but I didn't know the details on a previous episode, so I didn't really mention it. It stands for Playable Teaser. It was billed as a indie game that they released for free, but it was actually Hideo Kojima and Guillermo del Toro's proof of concept for the new Silent Hill.
Okay, you were mentioning that.
Well, I didn't really know about this part. So it is like a stealth Silent Hill prequel.
Cool. That actually sounds kind of neat.
It's like Amnesia the Dark Descent. You can't really do anything. Basically, the game is you're in a haunted house that loops, and you have to interact with the haunting so that the state will change as you go through.
Oh.
And the final puzzle unlocks a trailer for Silent Hills. And it's like, hey, this is what you've been playing.
That actually sounds pretty cool.
It is very atmospheric. People who play it say it's really, really scary. Having only watched it, there's a level of
disconnect.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's part of the problem with just watching a game as opposed to playing it in general.
That said, there were some good jump scares and some good genuinely creepy things, especially since the room just looped. They were able to do a lot of minor changes to make it feel, you know,
out of place.
Yeah. And the graphics, like, the thing that gives it away is the graphics are so good, it could not be an indie game. It's like, oh, finally, a next-gen game. There's just, like, things they do with light and reflections that are
way too hard to do. They're
just impressive, honestly. I'm not a guy who gets impressed by graphics.
This is completely non-sequitur, but have you noticed that the light sources in Payday don't actually produce the light, and that's just texture? If you go around breaking lights, that, like, the light that they produce stays there after you break the light.
That's a problem.
I have not actually broken any lights in Payday, now that I think about it.
Pretty much the only one that doesn't do that is the last day of the framing frame, the lights in the hallways actually produce light, but like on Shadow Raid, the like street lamps, if you shoot them out, there's still a cone of light there after you shoot the street lamp out. It's really annoying. Anyway.
I've never shot out the lights.
And the other one I've been watching, and I bought it because it's only $5 on Steam, but I haven't actually played it, is Five Nights at Freddy's.
I've heard of this one. VG Cats did a comic on it, actually.
Okay.
It's about, like, giant animatronic animals that try to shove you inside the suits, right?
Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, I don't think it's a great game, per se, but it's a really good horror experience, which I think is more lacking in video games than good games. Basically, you're a security guard at totally not Chuck E. Cheese's.
Okay, that's what I got out of that.
It's got a very Chuck E. Cheese's vibe, and you have to stay in, like, your security room, and at night, the animatronics wander around, and you have to protect yourself from them so you can watch them on the cameras. You have limited power because of budget cuts. So you have to choose when you close the doors and like when you turn on the lights.
Huh.
And there's one of them who will just bum rush you if you're not, if you don't check the camera often enough or if you do it too much. And it's just got a very good style to it. It's very effective at jump scares. It's an indie game that clearly knew what its budget was and used it effectively. And since horror movies have been doing that for 30 years, it's nice to see video games
finally
starting to
it.
Break in there.
Huh. That's actually...
Video games are not a very good horror medium, I don't think.
Say, I think that's only because you played horror games that are horror games, when really they're, here, have a gun games.
I think also you don't like being scared.
Also that.
What's the point of playing a video horror game if you don't want to be scared?
I don't get scared, I get angry at things. When yeah. I get scared, I immediately get angry at whatever it was that tried to scare me.
Well,
but also, games have a sense of agency and intelligence that go about it.
I think that's why good horror games take away your sense of agency.
Yeah. For example, in PT, all you can do is really is observe things. And, you know, you can, by observing the right things, you progress the game. And in Five Nights at Freddy's, that's also true. You have a button to close a door, open a door, and a button to look at cameras. You can't, like, fight or...
really interact with the enemies in any way.
Or quit your job because they're not paying you enough to deal with this. You get $140 a week.
What?
Is yeah, that clearly that is not worth the trouble.
Is it a full-time job? I mean...
You work from, I think, 1 to 6.
Okay, so still.
Speculation is it takes place in 1992.
Okay, that would be slightly better money. But speaking of which, we should play Damned sometime.
Oh yeah, I own that because you bought it for me.
I did.
That sounds familiar.
You own it because Tyler bought it for you.
Oh, that would be it then, yeah.
It's up to 4 players. 3 people are lost in random abandoned place B. There are a couple different maps. But one player plays a monster, and it can be different types of generic horror monsters. So there's like Freddy Krueger or Freddy Krager or something to that effect. And there's like a swamp.
Freddy Krueger.
Yes. There's like a swamp monster, and there's like a traditional walk through walls ghost type thing. So it sounds really cool, although I learned immediately after buying it, granted it was only like $5 at the time for the 4-pack, so I don't feel that bad, that the guys who made Left 4 Dead are doing something very similar. So
Evolve.
But I got Damned not knowing that game was going to exist eventually.
Can your machine run Damned then?
It's not super nice.
I haven't tried. It did not seem like something I should be concerned
about.
Well,
if Jeremy's machine will run it, get you, me, Ed, and Jeremy up on there. And
it's about as graphically intense as TF2.
Yeah,
so.
I can run TF2. Speaking of, isn't Ed coming back from the land of Europland?
Eventually. He has yet to get orders still. Theoretically, he's still waiting on his clearance, and those take for bloody ever.
Oh, okay.
But they still say it's going to be this month sometime, but he's apparently only going to get like 3 days notice before he ships out. So,
yay.
Yes, this month sometime. So next September... he should be back.
Exactly.
It's still this month.
Technically.
It's just next year's this month.
No, I think it's looking like it's going to be the last week of September, but that's kind of what we expected anyway. So yeah, Ed will be coming back from Germany land eventually.
We'll be bringing Wiener Schnitzel and beer.
No, he's going to be bringing his PS3 and a table. So
I didn't realize
he had a PS3.
Well, that's most of their furniture is actually inflatable, which I think was actually a great idea. But they have like a crafting bench for like doing paper craft type stuff, and like this really awesome. They have like this big dense coffee table that like folds out and has a bunch of shelves and stuff, and like the top of it folds out and is also storage. I don't know, it's really cool. But
how do you think they'd do in a fire?
Oh. What you mean if the place they lived caught fire, how
would their furniture that inflates do?
I mean it'd be almost immediately
better.
Destroyed, but it's also only like $10, so.
So we wouldn't have to save it.
Exactly. But we wouldn't have to run back. But we would have to go in for that table that requires 4 people to carry it. So
it has a high ignition factor, you would say.
Yes, oh, I would say that it has a high... I did not see that segue coming.
I did.
I was walking along, and a security guard came up behind me and ran me over with a segue.
It was
just
either that
now.
Or go back to Sailor Mars, and I already... one Sailor Mars reference per episode. It's in my contract.
In the name of the moon, those shoes are really tacky. Burn. Speaking of burning things.
Oh, God.
Like my beautiful transition, which has gone up in flames.
Yes. I gave it a burn notice.
We played Ignition Factor this week for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. It was super entertaining. Mint system?
There were systems.
It was something, that's all right.
So Ignition Factor is a game about being a firefighter in this, like, private firefighter contractor business where you get paid by the number of people you save.
Well, and that's how firefighters work, didn't you know? That's actually in their contract. If you save this many people, you get this much money.
Did you ever get a game over?
Yeah, I did.
Where he's like, yeah, this isn't working out. We're going to have to let you go.
You get fired?
Yeah.
That's one fire you can't fight.
Jeremy, okay. You got a crickets thing, right, you can put in here for us?
In the name of the moon, I am going to punish you. I could not make the pun in that very good. My inflection was all wrong.
So, anyway, you basically wander through one of two. Are there other buildings if you complete both?
Yeah, there's more levels.
There are four stages.
I actually checked a walkthrough because I was trying to
figure something out.
I beat both of them and decided I was done, so I didn't bother to wait to see.
I tried them both and failed them both miserably. So
I mean, I failed them both before I succeeded at both of them.
Yep.
So anyway, Ignition Factor. You get to choose between one of two burning buildings to save people from, either a steel mill or a chemical plant.
It's like a clothing...
It's a costume factory?
Yeah.
With mannequins everywhere?
Yeah, but they like say, hey, the chemicals here might cause chemical fires.
Because they're like fancy makeup things. That's how I read it anyway.
Because of reasons.
It also explains the mannequins. Okay. Do we want to talk about the levels specifically? Because they are kind of different, but...
Eventually.
Okay.
So you choose one of two locations, and then the boss is like, into the conference room! We've got to have a meeting about this important fire.
That's totally the way this works, right?
Before we can slide down the poles and go to fight it. And so then you get schematics of the building, which apparently the fire department has on file.
To be fair...
That is probably
I could believe that.
That is probably public record. I'll give them that.
And they took the time to pull out while the building is burning, and they're in the conference room waiting to leave to go to fight
this fire. Well,
they
could be on a quick reference record thing, like a computer. They get a call that says, hey, this building's on fire, and the computer just automatically finds it and pulls the record.
And then they have a meeting about it.
Although the building will still stand. You got some time.
To be fair, from Alex's perspective of being someone who works in the mining / metal refinery industry, she actually says that if a building like the steel mill would catch fire, they would actually just get everyone out and let it burn.
That seems like the safest thing, because you don't want firefighters trying to get into those chemicals that are probably spilling all over the place.
It is my understanding that that's what you do in this game.
Yeah, that seems to be what happens. Unfortunately,
all the real firefighters are like, no. And then you guys are like, well, we're the private contractor firefighters and we need the money.
Like, one of the buildings that you just let burn is like a 20-story skyscraper, so.
People are only in the 14th and 15th floor.
Clearly. That has glass floors in places. Okay, anyway.
Clearly. You examine the map. It doesn't really tell you where anything is, but it has sweet letters and some numbers.
I find that pre-planning map so hard to read for some reason.
I couldn't understand it.
You have to see the level, and then you can equate it to the map.
Yeah, but
you definitely have to fail once before you can...
Before it's useful?
Yeah.
Which I think makes it kind of a useless map.
The first run through, you probably should just be roaming around, seeing if you can find where everything is, because I found myself getting horribly turned around in both levels.
I actually never really got lost once I was in them.
But... Yeah, the steel mill, I get lost the first time I played it, but then I sort of figure out, oh, hey, this goes here, and this is a circle.
You have like a questionably useful mini map, right?
Yeah, if you hit select, I think you get a worse version of the map from the briefing.
Yeah, neither one of them are super good.
But it has like little circles that indicate where people might be. So
no, where you are and where your firefighter bros are.
Oh, it doesn't indicate where the hostages might be.
No.
The fire is holding them hostage.
Clearly.
I've been playing too much Payday. I've actually taken the tactic to just shooting everyone I can zip tie.
Wow.
It's cheaper.
Acceptable losses.
Exactly.
Damn.
It's economically efficient. I'll make more money by completing the mission than I lose by killing them. So, anyway. Speaking of killing hostages.
With fire. You just burn the building when you leave and blame it on that.
Alas, no Molotov cocktails are available.
So then
maybe in the next update that's supposed to release today.
So then you choose a corner to put your fire truck on, and you can use the fire truck 3 times per level. It removes fire from the screen, and the closer you are to the corner where you put the fire truck, the more fire is removed.
Otherwise, you have a fire hose that is in...
That has dubious usefulness.
Well...
It's necessary to complete the game.
Well, the fire truck is another place where it's not useful the first time because you have to figure out where the fire is going to be bad or where you're going to go last, because as the game progresses, there's more fire. So if you put it in the corner you're planning to evacuate last, that's more useful. Or if you put it where you start, because then you can use it on your escape.
Yeah.
So you have a limited amount of time before the building goes down, during which time you have a hostage quota that you need to rescue from the deadly fire terrorists. So you wander around dangerous buildings while stuff falls below you.
There's definitely a level or a part of the steel mill where you had to walk out onto a bridge over a boiling vat of molten iron and not fall into it and die.
Wouldn't that be, like, against some sort of code?
There should definitely be, like, railing there.
No,
you're
in Gotham. There's a Gotham fire department.
That would make so much sense.
And also explain why all these buildings are going up in flames. Or Chicago, maybe.
Gotham's supposed to be Detroit, right?
New York at night. Oh. It kind of depends on the writer. Right now, it's a little closer to Detroit, but...
I feel like Chicago actually would have been the better setting for Arkham.
Well, no, it's just Chicago. The reason the buildings are on fire is Harry Dresden went through.
Chicago is where Batman Begins and Dark Knight were filmed.
Huh.
And parts of Dark Knight Rises. Though parts of Dark Knight Rises were also Pittsburgh.
Also an acceptable place.
Because they had
place.
The Gotham
Knights were...
Knights.
They were in Pittsburgh's football stadium.
Yeah, okay.
They were in the actual Steelers football stadium. And I think they were the same colors, right?
Similar colors. And a bunch of Steelers played Gotham Knights football players. So anyway, ignition factor. As Tyler started to say, you have a fire hydrant. Fire hydrant? That's not the word.
Fire hose.
Fire hose.
That is
flash extinguisher.
That is detached from anything. You're just carrying around like the end of a hose.
Couldn't they have just made it like you're carrying around the actual extinguisher? Because that's what you're actually, the item you're using is a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, but it's also water, I guess. I don't even.
So why can't you just, hang on, this hose isn't working right. Ha-ha.
You can use that to put out fire. If you walk into fire without putting it out, you go flying, lose some health.
You have this sweet on-fire animation.
I love how just tapping fire immediately immolates your entire guy.
It also has more knockback than Godzilla. You go flying. Puny human is no match for fire terrorism.
Mwahaha. That's okay, though, because you're a fire counter-terrorist.
So you go in with the fire hose, and you can also, before the mission starts, choose different gear to take in with you. There are two special fire extinguishers, one for green chemical fires, and one for blue electric fires. Because, you know.
To be fair.
Wasn't it yellow?
No,
it's blue and green.
Why do I feel like there was a yellow extinguisher in there somewhere? Clearly, I am not paying as much attention to it
there
as I thought.
There might be something to mitigate poison.
Yeah, there's a mask that lets you go through toxic environments. There's a rope that does something.
We're not sure what, but it does something.
It apparently behaves like the hook shot, but we can't figure out how.
You can kick open doors, but if you have too much equipment, you can't unless you have an axe, which lets you do that.
And what kind of firefighter would you be if you weren't carrying around a fire axe?
I always carry the axe.
There's a prod to see if the ground in front of you is dangerous. And then there's a CO2 bomb.
Oh, is that what that is?
Is that what that is? Oh, I was like, that looks like a Semtex grenade.
I saw that someone was going to...
shouldn't be carrying that.
Exactly. I'm like, well, why are you offering me a grenade, fellow contract firefighter?
What is that other item? It looks like a block of C4, for lack of a better term.
I think that's the gas mask.
No, because there's the gas mask looks like a gas mask. Like, I knew right off the bat what that was. But there's another item that you can pick up, and it looks like a... like either a radio or a block of C4, like the actual handheld CB radio type of thing.
There are quite a few items, and I definitely didn't use all of them.
I don't remember that. One of the items of value find in the steel mill is just some dynamite lying around.
Why would that be there?
Oh, God. The building's on fire. Hey, Chief, look what I found. I found a stick of dynamite.
So speaking of sticks of dynamite...
we're evacuating right now.
Yeah. Speaking of sticks of dynamite just being left around places, apparently we recently accidentally loaded and shipped 6 nukes. And just let them unguarded on an airbase recently because no one realized they were nukes. They thought they were like regular warheads.
Oh, and that's regular warheads are something we should totally leave unguarded. That can't possibly go wrong.
But they were on an airfield just sitting there for 36 hours before anyone realized they're nukes.
Zach, the terrorists have missiles already. We might as well tell them how to use them. I tried to make a condom joke there and it really didn't work.
We know they're going to use the missiles and we should tell them how to use them properly.
Thank
with
you.
Proper protection.
Gotta use them responsibly.
Meaning space-based laser arrays to shoot them down.
Anyway, so let's talk about the pause screen for a moment, because it's really clunky in my opinion. It takes a while to load up, and to drop an item, you have to pick it up, drag it to a side, hit a button that reveals a trash can on the other side of the screen, and then drag it over to the trash can.
Yeah, that's... That's really clunky. And once you've dropped an item, you can't pick it back up.
It's Otherwise, you can put it in your inventory. But if you have too many things in your inventory, you can no longer sprint, which is of questionable utility.
Well, that's
or kick doors, but you don't need to kick doors if you got an axe.
Also, the sprint controls are you double tap, but then you don't hold.
Yeah.
So it's really easy to awkwardly sprint into fire while you're trying to...
Yeah, like you're trying to... You accidentally tell it to sprint, your guy would go, run, and then stop. Just like dead stop. And if you're trying to sprint, you never do. But when Jeremy said,
I was accidentally able to sprint when I was trying, I was just not able to stop sprinting when there were obstacles like fire or molten steel instead of me.
My problem was always I would start sprinting by accident right into fire because I'm like, I need to get a little closer to this fire. So tap, tap. And then it goes, right, I'll go put that fire out with my face. And he throws the hose down and goes running into the fire.
Also, the fire clearly spawns on a grid, but you don't really move to it, so it's really easy to try to walk in some safe zone, and since your hose is sort of to the right, walk into the fire that's slightly on your left leg.
And go flying back, and yeah.
You know, that's something that you don't really notice, but Link to the Past is entirely a grid system, and it actually slowly locks you onto the grid as you're walking. I feel like this game would have benefited so much from something like that.
There are definitely better grid-based games than this.
Well, I noticed it was grid-based pretty early on.
Yeah, but it doesn't lock you to the grid. It's really easy to be between two squares and you're
accidentally walking
by
into fire
properties on both of them. So anyway, you also have like NPC firefighters who will give you more equipment.
And wander into fire and constantly burn. It's hilarious.
Yeah, their AI is not great.
Well, like one of the things I kept thinking that you'd be able to do is recover HP by talking to them and getting resupplied.
Yeah, the HP, like, bar is almost hidden. It's not a bar, it's a counter.
I didn't notice it for a while.
I didn't notice it until I died the second time. I'm like, I guess if I walk into too much fire, I die? That makes sense, but...
It would be nice to have some sort of indication of how much is too much.
You can't seem to recover HP, which I think is the biggest problem.
Even if you're carrying a med kit.
I don't think that's necessarily a problem.
No, I agree.
I mean, they also give you a fair amount. The problem is more it's easy to make stupid mistakes you would never make in real life.
Like accidentally walking into fire.
That's pretty much the big one. Also, when you go across a screen load, there can be fire where you're walking, and you can shoot it from off screen, but
you
can't see it.
There.
So you don't know if you've got it, or if you're lined up properly with where you're going to walk, or if it's there in the first place.
One thing they did a very, very good job with on that respect is, because it's top down, they gave you a button to make anything that is impeding your view of the bottom floor transparent.
Oh, really? I never noticed that.
There is a button that will let you...
What button is it?
I think it's on the GameCube controller. I think it's R. Huh. Holding that down will make the like walkways and stuff in the steel mill transparent so you can see if there's fire.
That
would
have been super useful because I walk into hidden fire a lot.
Like, I know the shoulder buttons
It's one of the shoulder buttons.
The shoulder buttons, one of them strafed and one of them locked your movement so that you did not move and you could turn to fight fires.
Oh, that would have also been
I
useful.
Know there was a button, because I did hit it, and I was looking through...
I hit all the buttons, I just can't think of what it would have been. Maybe, I don't know. But anyway,
well,
yeah.
Unless I'm completely losing my mind, there was a button that did that.
So you go through dangerous fire buildings, trying to find hostages. The first level, the steel mill, or that's the one I think they intend you to do first, although it's on the right of the two. You can select.
Isn't it on the left?
I thought it was on the left.
Oh, maybe. You just have to walk over hostages and they'll join you. And then you have to get to the exit before time runs out.
Although I find the other level actually easier to navigate, even if the hostages are
I agree with you. It's easier to navigate. Because
it's smaller. It's just two floors.
Yeah.
Whereas steel mill is just this big old sprawling complex.
Yeah. But you have people who are like, I'm not leaving without Anne. You have to go save Anne.
And then you go save it. Can't you just lie to her and say, no, it's cool?
No, you can't.
We already saved
Anne. She's impervious to your firefighting lies. She's been deceived by too many firefighters in her past.
And then there's a guy in that same one where he's like, the water's too hot for me to cross. So you pour your fire hose into it for a little while and it lowers the temperature and he comes across.
And then you have to give him a med kit because he apparently hurt his feet walking across the slightly hot water.
No, when I did it, he just...
Oh, I had to give that guy a med kit.
Maybe if you have a med kit, he takes it and it's worth more points. So at the end of the level, you get points based on the number of hostages you rescued and secondary objective that the chief randomly gives you in the middle of the level and random loot you found.
You're basically doing a D&D dungeon crawl, except everything's on fire.
That sounds like a D&D dungeon crawl.
That is true.
Ocean's of fire resist, bro.
The next time I run a generic fantasy game, there are not going to be dungeons of elemental anything. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, well, it's because they're a terrible idea unless you use them very sparingly.
D&D fire dungeons?
elemental dungeons. It's okay to have a fire dungeon when you have a fire dungeon and an ice dungeon and a water dungeon and a plant dungeon and a void dungeon and a metal dungeon and a bad spelling dungeon. That's when.
And then you're playing Kingdom of Loathing.
Yeah, it's bad. One more thing. When you die, you lose a life. You know, that sucks. You only have 3 lives before you game over and have to start the game
and
all over
fired.
Again. Yes, you get fired, like we mentioned earlier. You have to sit through the briefing again, decide where you want the fire truck again, all from the beginning. You know, on the super goddamn Nintendo.
Yeah.
I really find this unforgivable on the Super Nintendo. And Mega Man X, one of my favorite games, also has it. But Mega Man X, the penalty for failure is picking a level, bro. You lose almost nothing for getting a game over in Mega Man X. You can do it as many times as you want. This one, you get 3 before you go to the start screen. Also, Mega Man X at least has passwords. I think this game does too, actually.
It does, because there is a password entry system.
I never noticed it. That would have been nice.
I know there is a password entry system because it's available on the start menu.
I think you have to clear both levels to get a password. I think you have to get to a new stage.
Gotcha. Well, that would make sense.
So anyway, what are your impressions of this game? I thought it was...
ambitious.
Yeah, it's got a lot of interesting ideas, but none of them really work. Like, the fire truck is cool, but the start menu is such a pain in the ass to use, it's not really satisfying. And you just get this really lame cutscene of, use the hoses! And then there's some less fire when you load up again.
I would definitely like to see somebody try something like this again. It's a game that I like the idea of because it's not something you normally see. It is strictly, you know, it's a man versus nature type of game because you're up against fire. There's no fire elemental trying to kill you by walking at you and you have to spray it with the hose. There might be malicious in later levels. We didn't
okay,
get that
true.
Far. There's not really any malicious intent behind any of it. It's strictly just... put out the fire, bro.
And save people.
Save people. That's what the game is. So I think I'd like to see somebody else give it a go and see what happens.
Firefighting is an okay theme. I think what's more interesting to me is the equipment system and how they really try to build this as you preparing. Here's a map. And where do you want the fire engine? And what gear are you taking?
Unfortunately,
bro?
The preparation means jack.
Yeah, I think I would like be fine with a fantasy adventure game where you're going into dungeons and finding treasure chests. And you're choosing what gear you go in with.
In fact, I think I've played games that do that fairly well. Like, I just can't remember any of them.
Or a sci-fi game. I think changing the theming and keeping that mechanic and making the planning a really strong stage would be fun. Like, I hear the new Tom Clancy shooter just has a... I think there's a Wii U version where you just draw your plan on the tablet and then everyone has that plan and they can always look down at it and see what the plan was.
Kind of like the...
pre-planning in that
pre-planning
one.
In the bank job.
Which
we
Ed
never
was
used.
Dicks on.
Well,
said.
I mean, that's my favorite part of like tabletop RPGs is watching the players plan and then watching their plan hit the fan and them trying to adapt. I think that's a really good element for a game. It's just not very well done here. I found this game frustrating and not terribly fun or engaging.
My biggest problem actually was that your avatar moves so slowly.
Yeah.
Well, he's in the room that's on fire.
Okay, touche.
He's a trained firefighter. He should not be going this slow.
Like, sprinting is basically useless because of how awkward it is to change directions on the fly.
That's
because you have to stop sprinting, turn to the direction you want to go, and then start sprinting again.
My biggest problem is that your extra movement that you get from being less encumbered is not nearly proportionally beneficial to carrying all the gear. Like, just having that many different types of gear available is so much more useful than being able to sprint awkwardly.
I think my bigger problem is how much this game wastes your time. It takes forever to get into the start menu and change your equipment.
It takes forever to move between screens.
It takes, if you get hit by fire, you can go make a sandwich and come back when you've recovered from fire. The one-hit kills send you back so far. And one-hit kills are fine if you get a quick reload. But it just seems to take forever to start the game back.
I didn't realize there were one-hit kills.
Falling into a molten pit of iron will do
that. Okay,
that
will be a one-hit kill.
Or I also died right away when I fell down the window, although that was my first death, so it might have been
that
I lost health.
Yeah, I fell down the window and I didn't actually die from it. I lost health, but I didn't die.
So this is completely random, but there's a guy sitting on one of those windows. How do you save him? I tried sprinting. I tried, like...
telekinesis.
Oh, well, I mean...
tossing him a rope.
I feel like telekinesis is an underused video game power.
It's because it's really hard to model. You have to have really good physics modeling, basically, and then trust the player not to ruin your game.
Well, that's essentially what the gravity gun is in Half-Life, is telekinesis.
Well, you've heard of PsyOps, right? I've mentioned this before.
Yeah, I've heard of PsyOps, yes.
I own it. It was a game on the Xbox. It was specifically designed to show off the Havoc engine, so your character has telekinesis, so you can do all sorts of fun stuff with the Havoc engine.
That's basically all my favorite power in BioShock was the
telekinesis.
At Skyrim, you have Fusrada. That's basically telekinesis.
Which breaks the game in certain places.
Well, only sometimes, when you really need it not to.
Yeah.
Right after you quick save.
Booster dock, quick save. Connect makes everything better.
So, I don't know, I feel like this game has a lot of good ideas, but like a lot of games we played with neat ideas, it just didn't implement them very well.
Yeah, it's ambitious, but it really didn't hit the mark for me. I say skip it, bro.
I think it's worth looking into.
Go down to the firehouse and get some subs instead.
I do like the idea of trying to do this with something that relies as heavily on the planning phase with a different skin, but I think it would also have to be slightly more complex to make it matter. I feel like the planning phase is just take all the things.
So rather than being like the guy on the ground, you would be more of the fire chief giving orders, or, you know, just a guy in charge giving orders.
Fighting RTS. To that sounds pretty good to me. You could make, like, big siege engine, fire engines, and...
That's actually, I think I mentioned this on the podcast before, but Ed and I got this one game called Natural Selection 2, where one guy is actually just, like, playing an RTS while everyone else is playing an FPS.
Like I said, Savage does the exact same thing.
That would actually be a really neat idea for this game, if you have a bunch of people going around trying to fight fires, and you have one guy, like, dropping tactical, like, fire extinguishers for them or something.
Yeah, and controlling the engines, and...
Battlefield 2 did a really good job on that too, now that I think about it, because one guy was in charge and could drop supplies and stuff to people.
And having a good commander is vital in those games. So, I don't know, there are a lot of things we could have done with this, but they didn't do any of them well.
Ambitious, but not the best.
Jeremy, what are we playing next week?
Well, it's between Super R-Type, which I'm not sure is still on the Virtual Console.
It's not.
I think the Neo Geo version still is, but I forgot to check before I came. I'll totally do that. So let's play Elevator Action. It's got a sweet name.
Oh, this sounds like it's going
to
be fun.
I'm dubious as to the amount of action or elevators involved.
Well, it is an NES game.
So there's probably elevators?
And some action. I mean,
that is true.
It's cartoon violence action, probably.
Okay, I can get behind cartoon violence.
So next time and last time, just like that scene in Mission Impossible. This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2014.
All the video games and other media mentioned herein are copyright of their respective owners.
Unfortunately, I don't own Square Enix. You can contact us at ltovg at lasttimeonvideogames.com, or Tyler at lasttimeonvideogames.com,
or Jeremy, G-E-R-E-M-Y, at lasttimeonvideogames.com,
and the best one, Zach at lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Our primary source of interaction is lasttimeonvideogames.com, where you can find all sorts of written material in addition to the podcast.
If you want to follow us on Google+, plus.google.com/plus/lasttimeonvideogames.
If you're one of those weird people who uses Twitter, we are at LTOVG.
Quick press X. Too late. You failed. The podcast is over.